Blog Talk Radio.
We've been on a long layoff, but we're back again, Lou. So how are we doing? How are we hanging?
Yeah, we're doing all right.
How the things going? Yeah. What's to talk about? Start off with some of these topics coming out of the NBA. And Lou, you know, it's the playoffs. So go ahead and lead us in. Bring us up to speed. Biggest news.
Well, we are pretty much into the third round. Well, not third round, third game of all the games that's going on right now in the playoffs. But the biggest news heading into everything is what's going on in Dallas. And the situation in Dallas, referring to Rajon Rondo.
And now, to explain this, because of course it's been all over SportsCenter as of today and yesterday, issues going on with him, and you know, I guess you could dig a little bit into his history, and you know, since when he was at Kentucky with Tubby Smith, and then he came and was dealing with Doc Rivers, and it seems every place he goes there seems to be an issue with his mentality, but fill us in on what just recently happened.
Well, pretty much going into game two, they're already shorthanded in game two. You know, Chandler Parsons is out. He's out for the rest of the playoffs with a right knee injury. And so that's really a big hit for the Mavs for the rest of the series. But also added to that, in game two, you pretty much didn't really see Rajon Rondo out there. And what I mean by that, he was out there playing, but he wasn't actually playing. It's just like he wasn't Rondo. He was just out there, you know, picked up a couple of unnecessary fouls, you know, being really, he wasn't mentally in the game at all. And he pretty much checked out of the game. I mean, never seen him like this, especially during the playoffs. Now, a lot of people say, well, now he's listed, he's out indefinitely with a back injury. And, you know, during the game when he's sitting, he wasn't sitting on the bench, he was sitting on the cushion on the floor on the sideline. So, but you can't use that as an excuse, because we've seen Rondo in the playoffs before. I mean, against the Heat, he literally played the game with one arm, literally. I mean, he had an injured, I think it was left arm or whatever, left or right arm, and he pretty much played the rest of the series with one arm. So injuries is something that's not going to stop Rondo from playing, but he just wasn't in the game at all, and it's another result of the situation between him and Rick Carlisle.
And, yeah, you know, to just jump on that bandwagon, Lou, I remember when he broke that elbow. Remember, he landed on it awkwardly, and then it basically kind of went awkwardly sideways. He dislocated his elbow. And, yeah, he played spectacular, even with one arm, in that series. And typically we knew from the first incident that happened in the regular season that this was something that was boiling over early on. So it's not really a surprise to us. I guess we didn't know how, to what extent this actually was. I guess it was a big kind of dissension early on. And, yeah, Chandler Parsons is out. You know, you would think that he, being in a contract year, would be a little bit more disciplined, right? So he can come on the court and actually shine at this particular time, because I'm guessing between the way him and Carlisle operate between each other, that you would look at the way that, you know, they probably have to share the ball quite often when Chandler's there. But, you know, with this knee injury, this would have been a perfect opportunity to come in there and fill in like he did the first week when he started with Dallas. You remember that, that first game? And then he turned around and played against Boston and scored like 30-something points, 39 points or something like that. I had close to a triple-double. He looked fantastic in that game. And, you know, since then, it just hasn't been the same. He hasn't been able to mesh or get along with management. But I got to tell you, for me, you know, it's just not a good pairing. It's not a good matchup. Him and Carlisle just can't seem to just lock this thing down. And Carlisle is a great coach. And so was Doc Rivers. And so was Tubby Smith. Those are great coaches. You know, two out of those three coaches have won championships. And we know, hopefully within the next future, or next few years, I would say, you know, depending on how, you know, Mark Cuban and that team brings in some talent, you could say that, wait a minute, but was Carlisle the coach when they beat when they beat Miami Heat the first time around?
Was he
the coach then? So we got to look at that. Those are three championship coaches that we just mentioned here. Tubby Smith won a championship in Kentucky. We know that Doc Rivers won it in Boston. And then here we go again with Carlisle. He has a championship. So this is really speaking more towards his attitude. As much as I love him, you know, remember I told you, Rondo's one of my favorite point guards in the game. If I had a choice, and I caught a lot of flack from this. So, but when I talk amongst friends and all, they say, you know, if I had a point guard to choose, of course I said Chris Paul first. Second would be Rondo for me. Not Derrick Rose, not Westbrook, except for this year. This year, I think I would say Westbrook over both of them. But, you know, technically speaking, and from a distance, I always thought that Rondo played the position very well. Now, he's always had pretty much a terrible shot. And, of course, we've noticed the different transitions of the NBA now, where it's almost, how would we say, Lou, it's almost vital, you know, it's a prerequisite. You have to actually be able to shoot the long shot, right? Whether it be the three-pointer or whether it be like the 17 to 15-foot jumper from that position, that is somewhat vital unless you're a good driver to the basket. And he suffered with shooting, and that's the only thing. But he's definitely one of the best distributors in the game. I'd say second to Paul, and maybe even LeBron. Even LeBron plays real good point forward, point guard. So I can't say that I'm too surprised. No, I can't lie. I am surprised that I didn't know it was this bad. Like you figured there'd be some kind of issue there, but this is really bad. This is terrible, and they're gonna have to figure this thing out. Obviously, you watch the press conference when the media asked Carlisle whether or not you know, Rondo would be back in a Dallas uniform. He said no.
it's official. He's done. He won't be back.
Yeah, he's done. Yeah, because of a back injury. Hint, hint, right? In quotations right there. So we know that didn't really go too well. So, yeah, much luck to that and fortune moving forward. So, you know. And then, you know, there's something else in the news in NBA. Go ahead, Lou. I mean.
Yeah. You know, I really. If there's one thing in the NBA that I can't stand more than, I would say, certain referees. And when I say certain referees, it's one in general, and that's Joey Crawford. Can't stand him. But aside from referees, the other thing that I can't stand is just piss poor GMs. People in the front office. And when I talk about that, I'm saying that Scott Brooks of the Oklahoma City Thunder has been fired, so he's no longer coach for Oklahoma City.
And, you know, Lou, before we came up and we was actually talking before, and I told you I was going to bring this up in the dialogue or in the conversation. When you look at what people do, and they tend to do this in all professional sports where they have copycat, right? We have a copycat league in everything you do. Whether it's the NFL and everybody was using the spread option, and then all of a sudden it was successful, then everybody started implementing a certain style of it, right? And the NBA, same thing. Same thing, you know, the type of game to where it's elevated now where nobody's using really the big man. It's like, you know, two forwards and three shooting guards, or a shooting guard for the point guard, and so on and so forth. And how this relates to Scott Brooks, I'm going to show you. You know, just last year, or this year actually, this season, early or late last year, the Golden State situation with Mark Jackson. You remember that? There was a 50-win team. They turned around, and actually it was two teams. One failed, one was successful, the other one wasn't. It was Golden State, and it was more prevalent, the Denver Nuggets. Remember, because what's the coach's name? Help me out. George Karl, right? George Karl won Coach of the Year, and because, I guess, of what they would call, what's that style of play that they would say, that the new thing, is it somethingnomics? What do they call that? I can't remember. It's not necessarily based on talent, but it's based on a bunch of theories and a bunch of calculations. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Analytics.
Analytics. You know, basically because Karl, which is more than likely going to go down as one of the best coaches in NBA history, he's going to be on that on the top 25 list, I would think, maybe bottom 25, you know, but guy has been successful everywhere he's gone, been to a few finals championships. He actually made Denver relevant since the Tim Babe Mutombo back in those days. And they basically, after winning Coach of the Year, fired him because of this analytics. Then you look at what was going on in Golden State. Mark Jackson wins 50-plus games, 51 games. And then you turn around and you look, they get rid of him. But then what happens? Steve Kerr comes in, right? And all of a sudden, they won 60-plus games. I think the most games they've ever won, you know, won in history. What was their record, 66-16 or something ridiculous like that? 67-15, I believe. One. That's the most games they've won in the franchise's history. And see, one would have to ask themselves, okay, yeah, this is going to be the model we're going to use. And, you know, this is somewhat ridiculous to me because when you look at Scott Brooks' resume, over the past two seasons, we can't fault what's happened. I mean, they've been to the conference championship like three or four times, and they've lost to the team that's won the championship. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what happened. You know, they lost to Miami the first year they went to the finals. Then after that, they lost to the Spurs twice. Spurs ended up winning the championship on one of those times. And who else went? I know Miami faced off against Spurs twice. Before then, they played Oklahoma, and who was the other team? There was another team that came
in Dallas.
Dallas. That's right. That was the rematch, right? So, Dallas was the first team. Second time they went, they beat Oklahoma. Third time, they beat San Antonio, and the last time San Antonio won. So that's how it went. But typically, they lost to that team every year. So since Brooks has been there. You look at the past two seasons, you've had injuries across the whole lineup between Serge Ibaka and between, you know, Westbrook or whether it be Durant. They've had injuries with the top three players on that team. I mean, Durant and Westbrook are two of the best top five players in the NBA, hands down. Can anybody deny that? I don't think so. Westbrook this year almost proved to me he looked like the best player towards the end of the stretch.
Yes.
He's up for consideration for the MVP. He won't win it because of the record and because they missed the playoffs. But, I mean, he basically single-handedly put them in a real good position to win, you know, and get a playoff situation. But Durant wasn't there for most of the time. Serge Ibaka's been injured off, on and off. And it's like they didn't have issues, you know, back-to-back seasons with injuries. So it's like they still were relevant. Now, can you imagine if that team comes back next season and they're all together? It's like, it's ridiculous. They see something, and see, that's what it is, you know.
Yeah, you know, that's the problem. See, next year it could be a great situation now that Durant will be 100% healthy, Ibaka 100% healthy, all of the players that they brought in from that trade, which pretty much puts them in the position to be the best team in the West. They have all the right pieces on the team. But now you have to run a new formula because now you don't have the coach anymore. So now you don't know what's going to happen next year. You don't know how the team is going to run next year, whatever coach you bring in. And also on top of that, you don't even know if Durant or Westbrook is even going to continue to play for Oklahoma City after next year.
You see, that's the thing. I think they're looking more or less towards, okay, whoever we bring in here. Now, it seems like from all the speculation, it's going to be Kevin Ollie. I think they're looking at the fact that, okay, we got two of the best players in the NBA. They're going to be back healthy along with Serge Ibaka. And it's like, this guy could do just like what's going on over there in Golden State, what Steve Kerr is doing with that franchise. And we expect these same results since everybody's coming back. And it's like, it don't necessarily work that way. See, different coaching styles really influence the way. Let me tell you something. You know, when you make moves like this, see, it's always a make or break. This doesn't just break a season. This breaks a franchise. Because like you say, Durant, after this year, he'll be a free agent. And take a look. You think he goes that Westbrook is going to stay by himself? He might like to run the show by himself. But let me tell you, I think he likes winning more. So, obviously, I think they have they're making a big mistake. They should have kept him. Of course, it won't make much of a difference because you can put a monkey in there to coach that team next year, and they're still going to win close to 50, 60 games at full strength. If they have that full roster, we're talking about Oklahoma City possibly being a top three seed, right? Either one, two, or three, basically. They're going to win close to 60 games when they're all playing on the court. As we remember, what there was like almost 11 games below 500, and it ended up basically as an AC tied for the AC. Only lost the tiebreaker because of those earlier games that was in the middle of the season. So we can never take that for granted or look at the circumstance or the situation and say that I'm going to mimic what somebody else has done, because that's what seems to be spreading now. Teams have winning coaches, and now they turn around and they fire. Good one. I don't get it. But I guess it makes sense to them. So. But yeah, moving forward, you know, you got a lot of the NBA, and this is the thing we didn't really get a chance to talk about early on with the matchups. You know, we was out for a little bit taking care of some things. And, of course, I was very surprised to see the matchups that went ahead and paved the way here, especially in the low side of the Eastern Conference Finals, and or the Eastern Conference side, I should say, between like Brooklyn making it and Boston. Let me tell you, that Brad Stevens, man, you know, this is what I want everybody to know. See, Lou is from Boston, Massachusetts, so he's that New England area sport over there. Everything New England is like him. And see, for the past decade here, New England's been winning everything. And see, sometimes I got to give credit where credit is due. And let me tell you, Danny Ainge, you don't like to hear it, but you got to look at what he was facing. Look, you got Doc Rivers basically won now. As soon as everybody was getting old and their contract was up and everybody was leaving Pierce and all the rest, and Rivers wanted to go somewhere else to take his brand over there in L.A., they needed a coach. After a while, two of the big three left. There goes Ray Allen. There goes actually all three left. Ray Allen left, and Pierce and Garnett left. And basically Boston was left with nothing but Rondo. Rondo's a headache. They get rid of him. So they basically lost everybody that took them to a championship, or the key players, I should say. And they basically have these team of cast members, and it's like, man, they got a whole bunch of picks left. And then on top of having the picks, they got a coach that knows how to coach. I mean, he comes in second season, right? This is his second year with Boston, right? Or is this his first? This second year, right?
I think this is his first.
Wow. Is it really? No. He was here. He was with him last season. I think it's his second season. I think it is. Oh, no, don't hold me to it. I could be wrong. But, I mean, this is ridiculous progress, because they have a bunch of BNC players, and he's getting the best out of them. And let me tell you, anybody that can win over there and Butler and make that a relevant team in the NCAA, they got to have some kind of knowledge or some type of skill. I mean, look at them. Boston's a 7-seed. And let's not forget what Carolina did last season. Last year, Carolina was sitting there, was in as an AC last season. And they basically kind of fell out of favor that quickly. Of course, they had injuries, but they weepers, jeepers, and creepers. And Miami Heat, of course, we know the whole thing with Chris Paul. Not Chris Paul, I'm sorry. My tall guy, Chris Bosh basically got injured with the lung injury, and he was gone, so that kind of hurt. LeBron obviously leaves, and they don't make the playoffs. The Pacers, Paul George came back towards the end, but they needed to beat Memphis to get in, and they lost that game. But you got to say, boy, next year they're going to be a problem. So you look at that, you know, the job that Boston did, this guy, man, he did a spectacular job. They won the last six going in. And of course, yeah, you know, it was garbage time because Cleveland was basically resting the lineup. But come on, six games, second year he's in the playoffs, that's phenomenal. It's exceptional. So, you know, I was very enthused about that. So the matchups have been matched up, and of course the top half of the team are doing as what we expected. All of them are up 2-0 outside of the Raptors, which we expected that because, you know, one of their key players is injured. On the Wizards, that's just a dangerous team to me. Like I told you, if Chicago would have faced off against the Wizards, I don't think they would have got past. So they really kind of lucked up towards the end there. And right now, the way Jimmy Butler is playing versus the way Derrick Rose is playing, and they have a good cast of players that can put points on the board with Gasol and Taj Gibson, and Mirotic is injured right now because of the scuffle. But they got a good cast that can help kind of put points together and play great defense. So they're sitting mighty good right now. You know, they're up 2-0 over Milwaukee, but we know Milwaukee kind of stumbled their way into the playoffs. They weren't really on a high, so
yeah,
that would have been the best matchup for them anyway. But you know, basically the top half of what we expected are going to be the ones advancing to the next round. Chicago and Cleveland will meet should they win their prospective games. Now we expect that to happen. You know, I think Boston might win at least one, maybe get swept. But they've been pretty competitive in you know, the game so far. So it hasn't been total annihilation. Young team, you're going to use, you know, some seasoning. So what's your thoughts on the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, everything in the East pretty much has panned out exactly how it should, especially with Toronto and Washington. I mean, Even with Kyle Lowry, even if he was 100%, it wouldn't have made a difference because Washington is playing. Really, the way they're playing in the playoffs now is how we pretty much expected them to play the whole season. They weren't able to do that the whole season because, you know, Bradley Beal has been out most of the season with injuries. And another guy that they had, like, I think this is his second or third year, Otto Porter, who they picked up, who they thought he was going to be a decent player to come off the bench for him. He hadn't showed up. Now he's showing up for him. And, of course, you have Paul Pierce, who's on the team there for a reason, and that's for playoff time. And fourth quarter comes, Paul Pierce does what Paul Pierce has always been known to do. And you still got John Wall, who is the assist leader for this season and still – distributing the ball everywhere. I think game two he had like 17 assists and like 25 points, you know, playing great defense. So that whole team is in tune. So Toronto, they don't have a chance at all with the Wizards right now.
Yeah, I agree. It's really setting up to be ugly. It looks like the Eastern Conference teams, all of those teams are going to pretty much sweep. I know Atlanta's been struggling a little bit against Brooklyn, but, you know, Deron Williams is basically a shell of himself. So, be this shy and go to the Western Conference.
Bring that up.
He doesn't deserve it. So, you know, the Western Conference, where we left off last time, and, man, it was crazy how that kind of shaped out and worked itself out. Golden State won. Houston Rockets 2-3, the Clippers 4, Portland, which is a travesty to me. Shouldn't be that, but divisions, okay, whatever. But, you know, you got the Grizzlies, San Antonio at 6, Mavericks at 7, and New Orleans Pelicans at 8. And I got to say, I hate to see the Clippers and San Antonio sit there and have to face off against one another. It really should have been, you know, Memphis and San Antonio. If they asked me, Portland should have been down there at the 6th seed. So, but they wasn't. But, you know, the way that it's shaping up is basically what we thought. Houston right now is you know, due to that whole situation that's going on with Rondo, they're dominating the Mavericks right now, 2-0 so far. Dwight Howard almost looks pretty revitalized, helping the Beard do his thing. And, of course, we look at the Clippers and San Antonio Spurs, best matchup of the playoffs so far, I would have to say. 1-1 big-time overtime game yesterday, so we expect to see what that was going on. Memphis, of course, is dominating Portland after they made their little crazy motivational sign, you know, we don't lose to Spanish players. Apparently you do. So maybe you need to rethink.
That was all Nicholas Batum that said that.
Yeah. See, he needs to rethink his strategy.
I think
it's just not working.
Yeah, he's thinking too much of international play. You're not on the French team now. You know, save that for when the Olympic Games are going.
Yeah, it makes sense then, right? Well, not really, because they probably would lose then too. So, good old Nick with them. So, pretty much, you know, the Pelicans lost to Golden State. They're going to lose, and hopefully they might get one or two game, maybe one game out of that. I think the three best – well, actually, I'm going to say the three best – the four best teams, I can't even say four, really five best teams right now to me, of course, is Golden State, Houston, Clippers, and San Antonio. But then again, we can't leave out Memphis, dominant defensively. In the next round, they look like they'll face off against Golden State, right? The winner out of 4 or 5 will face 1 versus 8. So that means that 2 and 7 will face off against the 3 and 6 winner. And that 3 and 6 winner, I believe whoever wins out of that goes to the conference championship. But then we always say that, and then it ends up being something just a bit different, you know, between what the Rockets do. If they're for real this season, we'll see, but I don't think so. I don't think they're ready, and I think, you know, they're playing a Dallas team that is in peril and has struggled towards the last few games down the stretch, and it doesn't look good. So,
yeah.
Sorry, that was my perspective.
Yeah, we have to see what happens in the next. We have to see what happens in the next round for Houston, because I don't, you know, Dallas is going to challenge them. They're going to play, you know, decent with what they have, but it's not going to be enough. And from, you know, James Harden, he's going to be James Harden. No one's going to stop him on the perimeter one on one, and he's going to get to the free throw line, make his free throws. I mean, that's what he plays for. You know, break you down, go to the hole. Like, okay, you will foul me. All right, I'll hit these free throws. That's what I want to do. You know, and Dwight Howard is playing a lot better. Josh Smith is being very productive for him, surprisingly. And I'm also happy to see Corey Brewer actually step up in the playoffs. This is his first time actually playing in the playoffs, and he's been stepping up well for him. And Trevor Ariza has really developed a nice perimeter shot as well to go along with his defense. So they're playing pretty good, but we got to see how that continues going into the next round. And as far as San Antonio and the Clippers, yeah, I'm sorry. The Clippers are still the same as they always are. I don't expect nothing out of them. It's going to be the same old thing with the Clippers. And you've seen it at game two, at the end of game two, when it comes down to defense and actually playing smart mentally, they can't do it. I mean, you literally left Mills open at the other end of the basket. You know, he wasn't shooting, but he was playing defense, put a hand up, and he basically had time to walk down the other end of the court. Nobody picked him up. Redick didn't pick him up. Paul didn't pick him up. You know, Spurs got the rebound, and they just threw it down the other end of the court, easy layup. Like, you're not going to win like that. Playing like that, you're not going to win. And they're going to continue to send DeAndre Jordan to the free throw line, man.
Yes, they are. 35% from the free throw line, really? Come on, man. You can't win like that. That's what, 3 out of 10, 3.5 shots out of 10? He needs to get a grip of something. He's a liability towards the end of the game. Man, jeez.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah, man. and menace, and the series between Portland and the Grizzlies. Grizzlies are going to take that series. And it's a very unfortunate situation for Portland because, you know, Wesley Matthews, their starting small forward, their three-point shooter, he was out for the season, and you won't see him at all during the playoffs. And also you now have Aaron Afalo, who's banged up. I don't even know when he's going to be back. And you still got Aldridge, who's still favoring that hand. He's still playing great, but he's not going to play the way he actually wants to. So you got too many people that's banged up. You know, I think Steve Blake, he's favoring a little injury as well. He's still playing. So they're basically just trying to do the best that they can with what they have. So it's an unfortunate situation for them.
Yeah, it's that's going to be somewhat of a struggle, and of course, you know that, the way the matchups go, it's going to pretty much be the same. You know, the top heavy is really the battle's really going to be between the Clippers and the Spurs. That's going to go seven games, in my opinion. They still a game. I think, you know, the Clippers are still one in San Antonio, but when it gets down to it, you know, I don't know right now. If I had to pick, I'd probably say San Antonio winning seven, but I could easily see the Clippers winning and stuff. So it'll be a tough war matchup there. And going on further, somebody.
Defense.
Yeah, they do, especially down the
they
stretch.
They got to play better defense. And you got Kawhi Leonard, who got the Defensive Player of the Year award. You got to play better defense, man, because if you don't, the Spurs are going to kill you on their defensive end.
And, yeah, they're going to get those, you know, those rebounds and just turn it up. And they have those shooters between Green and Mills, and some of those guys coming off the bench, they'll hurt you. So moving forward there, Lou, look at this, man. You know, what's going on with this domestic violence? But, see, now it's different. It's kind of flipped now. Now you got two women fighting against each other, Brittany Griner and her girlfriend or fiancé, I should say. And I don't know what to make of that. Both of them had the police come in and take it down. I mean, do they get suspensions? Is this going to be a big deal? Is anybody going to say anything about it? I wonder. What do you think, Lou?
Well, people are going to say as much about it as they are right now. And that's pretty much going to be the end of it. I don't think we're going to hear anything. I don't think we're going to hear anything leading up to the WNBA season. So it's just the topic. That's the topic for right now, and probably, you know, by tomorrow, it's going to be like whatever.
Well, you know what? I'm going to just say that it's something that typically doesn't or isn't reported, you know, same-sex domestic violence amongst women. I'll say that. So usually women are the victims, so that's why I usually get the majority of the press. Of course, the man is usually being a bigger, more dominant person physically is going to get a lot of the hubbub in the news. So
we had the same,
you know,
we had the same situation happen like a couple years ago with Shamika Holzlaw. Domestic violence situation, and how much have we heard from that?
You know, that's what I want to ask you. In that situation, was it two women or was it her and a dude?
Yeah, two women, her and her girlfriend.
Yeah, it'll die out quickly. I don't mean to laugh, but I'm just saying, you know, it's just something that they're not going to pay attention to.
Yeah, it's going to be over with, you know, whatever, slap on the wrist and go about their way. That's how it goes. The same thing with Shamika Holzwall. I mean, Shamika Holzwall, she shot a gun at her in the car. She was shooting the gun, and she was shooting at the car. And you know, I guess she's serving time for it, but she's not going to serve that much time. Not as much as she should.
Well, not as much as they would do a man, though, right?
So, exactly.
And the world will find a way to Yeah, I'm not going to touch that. But anyway, moving further, and also another trend that's actually being copied is that now in the WNBA, we have another situation with people leaving early. And, Lou, go ahead. You know, I guess what we see is another trickle-down effect. As you stated early on in conversations in previous shows, was the fact that, you know, a lot of those WNBA stars are going overseas because they pay better. So yep. It's like that leaves a talent void out. So now we're going to open up the doors early to let these college athletic women come out early and go to the WNBA. What do you think about this?
It's not something that's happened often. There's very few players that have done it. I know a few years back, I think 2009, there was a player from Rutgers. I think her name is Epiphany Prince. She came out early, you know, after her third year. Now, the thing was is that she left college but went to go play over Europe. The women's college game, they do have an age restriction, whereas you're not eligible until you're 22. She was 21. So she went over to Europe to play, and then, you know, later on in that year, she went into the draft. And you have a few other players that have done that as well. That's kind of, it's not common, but it's not a surprising thing to see, okay, the women college players, they'll go overseas and play, and then they'll put themselves into the draft, you know. So, but I think Jules Lloyd, who was number one pick from Notre Dame, I think this situation here, I think she is the very first one to do it, coming straight from college going to the pros. And with the situation that we have going on now that we've talked about, you know, in previous shows about, you know, these NBA, these WNBA pro players not getting paid the amount of money like how they do overseas. I mean, pretty much over here compared to what they're being played overseas, it's pretty much nothing. And as a result of that, you see Diana Taurasi and Candace Parker playing overseas, you know, for a Russia team or any other teams. You have a few other players that do that when the WNBA season is over with. So you're going to see more of a common trend of that happening, to where you're going to have these players coming in from college and they're going to start going overseas first and maybe come to the WNBA. And I think that being that the money is so low also contributes to the fact is why you don't see a lot of the female athletes coming out early. So it's like, what's the point of coming out early when you're not really going to get paid that much anyway?
Yeah, that's true. I don't, but you know, maybe it's more than what they're actually making now. WNBA salaries, what they get around, what, $100,000 to $200,000, and that's if you're a really good star athlete. I don't know how much the rookies get in, but, you know, it's practically the case, and it can get very dicey in that. But, you know, so be it. I mean, everybody's following suit. It only makes sense to just follow the yellow brick road. So, moving forward, getting into the NFL, and this is a topic that I've been wanting to say for the last couple of minutes, but here it is. But, you know, as we spoke, you know, there was a fellow young man basically was exiled from a professional sport, basically exiled for people liking him too much. So, obviously, he comes back. He tries out for a one Chip Kelly and looked like he has an opportunity to make a roster. Now, of course, they say he signed a one-year deal, but the thing is, he has to make the roster. See, so that's not celebrate too quick. You know, Tim Tebow, my man, basically went out there for Tom House in California on his off time, was learning how to throw the ball more effectively and be more accurate. So, look like he has an opportunity here to make good on his training, get in some good practice, because, you know, historically, he's been a terrible practice player. And the thing about it is he's always been a type of football player who does well on game time. But this won't cut it. He's going to have to go ahead and learn his playbook. He's going to have to put the ball in good places in practice. So we're going to have to see, and we'll see what happened. Apparently, I guess his workout that he did with Chip Kelly must have impressed him because it gave him the opportunity to go ahead and bring him on. So we'll see how that turns out, and I'm very happy for him, and I'm one of his biggest fans. So that's my hands-on put for a one Tim Tebow. So anything to add to that, Lou, or should I just go ahead and just go to the next one?
Yeah, he'll be a good third string.
Yeah. You know, don't be surprised because, let me tell you, I see the two quarterbacks before him, and I tell you what, you know, looking at, I got a hiccup.
That's what you get for talking about Tebow.
Yeah, apparently that's some kind of curse, the Tebow curse. But no, Sam Bradford basically is an injury issue, and Mark Sanchez is not really the greatest situation circumstance, so he really has opportunity if he does well. So we'll look forward to it, and we'll see how it turns out. But moving on to Jameis Winston. Yeah, I can't barely talk now. You know what I'm doing? I have to let you talk too much air. But Jameis Winston comes out and say what happened with the crab situation. He got a hookup. Hookup went bad, and obviously he didn't know what necessarily to – he couldn't say anything back then, but now he obviously can come out because there's no suspension coming for the game or setting free food. So now, here it is. The truth comes out. And yeah, the hiccups is killing me. So I'm going to let you do some of this talk. Jameis Winston, what do you think about him coming out now with the truth at this particular time?
Well, like the last show we were doing, we was talking about that being a possibility, like, you know, him getting a hookup from somebody that he knows that works there. Because, I mean, really, when you think about it, why would you actually just walk out the store with crab legs? I mean, just randomly, just crab legs. I mean, that's not something common you would see. So he obviously knew somebody that was working at the store. They said, hey, you know what, I got you. You ever come by, you need something, I got you. And that's what happened. And apparently he got caught. Somebody saw what was going on, you know, notified the manager, whatever, and he got caught in the situation. Now, the thing that killed me was, I actually saw the video of him explaining it. The thing that killed me was the person he was telling this to. I don't remember the guy's name, but he had this look on his face, and the way he was responding back is like he couldn't comprehend the fact of, you know, someone giving you the hookup on something. It was just hilarious. It was hilarious to me. I'm like looking at this guy and the way he's talking and the expression on his face, like, are you kidding me right now? But then again, I think about, yeah, okay, well, yeah, you got money, so you don't ever have to get the hookup on somebody. So that's why you can't comprehend what's going on. But
no, I just pointed it out. Just, basically, just trying to do an extra good job and extra appalled to everybody in the media could side with him. I mean, get out of here, please. Football players all the time get no free hookups wherever they go. They don't get any money. So naturally, of course, you're going to go to different spots and certain restaurants. You have somebody who's going to hook you up. That's all that happened. It leaked out there. Maybe the assistant manager saw it and said, hey, you know, we need to report this. Jameis Winston, you will never believe he just walked out without paying for some crab legs. And that's basically what happened there. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure if he's an NFL player, he's gotten a hookup. He's just trying to do his extra best to look appalled.
Yeah, The whole thing was just hilarious. I'm like, are you kidding me right now? The way this guy was looking and the way he was responding back is like, all right, come on, man. You just cut this out. You're playing this up way too much. Way too much.
Oh, man. So, I tell you, so, what's going on? Of course, we got the NFL draft coming up, and there's a lot of players. Will Jameis be number one, Mariota two? We'll figure it out. It'll come. We'll get more into the NFL draft as it gets closer and draws near. We got a full week. We'll talk about it more, excuse me, next Thursday or even this Sunday coming. So not to go there. But, of course, another domestic situation that happened last season with Greg Hardy in the terms of his suspension have led him to be suspended for 10 games. And I don't know, people are outraged because the contract was six, but I mean, hey, he basically beat his chick up and threw her on a couch full of guns. You know what I mean? He had a history of beating her down. I mean, last year he didn't really get suspended. He just got paid for not playing, mm-hmm. and he got his money, and they had an exemption rule for him. So, I mean, this is really not, this, should this really even be news? I mean, yeah, bro, 10 games, take it. Of course, the players, the association is going to go ahead and fight it, and it might get reduced a little bit. But, I mean, he beat up his chick. You know, and mercilessly at that. It's not as if, you know what I'm saying? Remember I told you, Luke, when it gets to a situation where you know that you might do something, you might need to just walk away.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. Especially, you got to look at it, man. When you're a superstar, that's why I don't ever get. It's like you're making millions of dollars. What do you mean? You can't find another woman? Really? Man, you'll get both good and bad women. Be real about it, right? Because the good ones will look at you too. Oh, stable money, stable thing. I'll try it out. I'll see if he works out. Yeah. Come on, man.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all don't have to stay. Y'all can leave and find another one.
Yeah, and also you gotta look at it as well as like they're superstar, they're star players, and you're playing in a league, especially like the NFL, where we've seen recently that situation like this, they will overlook. They'll overlook. They'll turn a blind eye. Like, okay, you know what? You go and handle this. You go to rehab for this amount of weeks. You go through this, yada yada yada, and then everything will be fine. So you have the league itself that's not really taking responsibilities and actually punishing these players for doing certain things. They're basically telling them, like, okay, you did this, but you're good, so you can still play.
And now it's only tightened up because it's basically got into the mainstream media, especially with Ray Rice situation. So, yeah. You know, we got to make good on this before this happens, and this could turn out to be an ugly situation. I'm really almost choking and dying of breath for the hiccup. And I got to keep it going, so mm-hmm. A terrible situation. But, that's typically what's going on with this Greg Hardy situation. It's them going extra much to look good in front of everybody else. And they just don't want to say nothing. So, I mean, I'm not really surprised by what triggered that and, you know, how that looks. So, they can fool all, you know, the rest of the world, they can't fool us. I mean, man, I'm really struggling there, but struggling through.
Yeah. Well,
and get a cup of water.
As far as what's going on currently in the playoffs, we have Cleveland. It's up 72-60 from Boston in the third quarter. So a lot of funky stuff is going on with the officiating, which pretty much led to Cleveland leading. But regardless of that, Cleveland is going to run away with this series anyway. You know, Boston is playing tough and they're playing as good as they can, but they just don't have enough to actually, you know, dominate this series. And right now we have in the second quarter, halfway through the second quarter, we have Milwaukee actually up on Chicago 46-31. No, Antetokounmpo is playing right now with 15 points. So Rose is now got 8 points. But really, it all really for Milwaukee, if they're ever actually going to have any chance, that O.J. Mayo has to get out the slump that he's pretty much been in the slump all season. You know, it's pretty much anything he throws up just can't go in no matter what he does. So if anything goes O.J. Mayo's way at all during this series, Milwaukee will actually have a chance to even contending against Chicago. But as it stands now, they might take this game, but as far as the rest of the series go, I don't see much else from them.
Listen, Chicago is like, they'll probably win in six. They're going to lose probably this game, might win the next. Or they'll lose this one and then win the next two. You know how it is with them. They can never make anything easy. So I expect that to be drag out proper. Before we go, to get into this Pacquiao Mayweather fight, a lot of things going on. Lou, who do you got in that fight anyway? We had a pick today, and I'm sure it's not going to really change, but who do you have and tell me why?
I am going for Pacquiao. And I think he, you know, everybody's going Mayweather. Pacquiao has no shot, but I think Pacquiao does have a shot. But the thing about it is Mayweather's not going to knock him out. Mayweather's not going to knock him out. What Mayweather's going to do, he's going to strategize this, and he's going to drag this out. He's going to drag this fight out to every round, and he's going to win by judgment. That's what he's going to do, land the most punches, and that's how he's going to try to win.
I agree. I think it's like I would rather see Pacquiao win because he just comes off as a better individual. But more than likely, Floyd is probably going to win because of the way he fights. Best defensive boxer in the history of the game, sadly, you know what I mean? He's going to match up against Pacquiao. Pacquiao's going to have to take some chances, and the thing about that is that he could miss. And if Floyd, counters those misses, it could be dangerous. It could be dangerous, but I want Pacquiao to win, but I think Floyd will. I think he's going to end up probably playing a real defensive fight all the way to 12 rounds, and it'll be by a point.
Yep.
And landed hit.
What do you think about the referee only getting paid like $25,000 for the fight?
You know, that I don't know. You know, boxing is very, like, tainted. You know what I mean? You can never trust anybody. The judges, the refs, they always tend to do something that's really suspicious that you have to just kind of, we don't trust these guys. So, you know, I'm very, you know, that's very suspect. I tell you what, $25,000 just for that. I wish we could do that, right? Maybe do about 10 matches a year.
Yeah.
We would never get that. I imagine $25,000 is a lot for that, but then like in other like venues, you might get what like $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 maybe.
Yeah, probably. I'm more concerned. The referee isn't even my concern in this fight. My concern is the judging. That's always been. I don't watch much of boxing, but every time when I do watch on this big events, my main concern is always the judging, because those are the ones who always screw somebody over.
Yeah, you know, like I didn't Pacquiao lose like somebody, and I think he lost to Bradley, and it wasn't even close. Like he dominated that fight. So it's always something along those lines, and you know, I think they ruin the game, man. I don't really like the attitude, and plus, you know, we used to came up in an era where a lot of heavyweights, whether it be Holyfield, Tyson, Foreman, Michael Moore, Lennox Lewis, those were the things that we used to like to watch. You know, Ray Bowe. I mean, you know, Ray, even you know, Roy Jones and them being in, you know, middleweight even that was entertaining. But, you know, the Mayweather's like, okay, we see you. But really, it's just a corrupt sport. You never know what to expect. Those judges always see things in a ridiculous way. I don't know. They need to have, like, an electronic computer. So I think if you go more or less to that, where the computer will catch the image when they actually land the hit and tally it up, you wouldn't need those judges. You wouldn't need them, but they'll keep them there because they're now complaining against the machine, but we know the people are much worse. So, anyway, I better get ready to get out of here and let them load some beautiful music, Lou, because I can't breathe, but... Anyway, we'll see you guys back again Sunday night, 8 o'clock. Look forward to another show. We'll have more updates. Leave a beautiful music, Lou.
Yep.
I'll say peace to him.
Yep.